Gene Randall. U.S. President Donald Trump is in Japan for a four-day state visit, one heavy on ceremony and photo ops, though there are serious issues to discuss, including trade and tariffs. AP correspondent Shelley Adler has a report on day one of Mr. Trump's stay in Tokyo.
President Trump opened a state visit to Japan by needling the country over its trade imbalance with the U.S.
I would say that Japan has had a substantial edge for many, many years, but that's okay. Maybe that's why you like us so much. But we'll get it a little bit more fair, I think. I think we'll do that.
Trump also praised the relationship between the U.S. and Japan.
I don't think it's ever been better. This probably is the best, and we're going to keep it that way.
I'm Shelley Adler.
Iranian media are reporting that Iran's foreign minister has arrived in Baghdad to meet his Iraqi counterpart. Tehran's official news agency says Mohammad Javad Zarif will spend 2 days in Baghdad to focus on the situation in the region. Zarif has just wound up talks with leaders in Pakistan. Meanwhile, the Trump administration says it is sending another contingent of troops to the Persian Gulf. Here's AP correspondent Sagar Magani.
The president says another 1,500 Americans will head to the region.
We're going to be sending a relatively small number of troops.
It's part of a buildup that began after what the U.S. said was a threat from Iran, without giving either details or evidence. The Pentagon says the additional troops will focus on protecting those already there.
We do not see these forces as provocative.
Acting Assistant Defense Secretary Katie Wheelbarger echoing the president in downplaying the prospect of a conflict.
I don't think Iran wants to fight, and I certainly don't think they want to fight with us.
Sagar Magani at the Pentagon.
Cyril Ramaphosa was sworn into office today as South Africa's president. He got the government's top job last year after his predecessor, Jacob Zuma, was forced to step down amid a number of corruption scandals, including one using millions of dollars in public funds at his private estate. This is VOA News. The United Nations has instituted moves to strengthen its response to the latest Ebola epidemic in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, which has already claimed more than 1,200 lives. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the World Health Assembly in Geneva, where the new plan was unveiled.
The Ebola epidemic was declared 10 months ago in conflict-ridden North Kivu and Ituri provinces in eastern DRC. Since then, growing insecurity and community mistrust have hampered efforts to contain the virus, heightening the risk of the disease spreading to neighboring countries. To deal with this increasingly complex situation, World Health Organization spokesman Tarek Jazarevich says the UN, in close cooperation with the DRC government and partners, is strengthening its political engagement, bolstering preparedness plans, and increasing support for humanitarian coordination.
That was Lisa Schlein reporting for VOA from Geneva. President Trump has declared a national emergency to approve the sale of billions of dollars worth of military equipment to Saudi Arabia. The move bypasses Congress and has angered members of both parties. Congress had blocked the sales of offensive military equipment to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates because of the civilian death toll in the Saudi-led coalition's war in Yemen and the killing of U.S.-based dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi. United Airlines has extended the grounding of its troubled Boeing 737 MAX jets by a month. Here's AP correspondent Mike Rossia.
United Airlines said Friday it is removing the troubled Boeing 737 MAX jets from its schedule through August 3rd, a move that goes a month beyond what United had planned. With that decision, United said it will cancel about 2,400 flights in the busy June and July travel window. The move puts United in line with Southwest Airlines and American Airlines, the other two U.S. carriers with MAX jets. Both had already dropped the MAX from their schedules into August. All MAX jets were grounded worldwide in March after a deadly crash in Ethiopia, which was the second MAX crash in 5 months. I'm Mike Rossia.
U.S. intelligence agencies will cooperate with a new Justice Department investigation into whether officials overstepped their bounds and spied on President Trump's 2016 campaign. The Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, says the intelligence community would provide U.S. Attorney General William Barr with all of the appropriate information for his investigation. A directive from President Trump allows Barr to declassify information on the Russia collusion investigation, which has caused deep concern among those who worry about the public release of secret information, which they say could compromise national security. They also argue that Barr could selectively release information and be misleading on how the special counsel investigation began. Gene Randall, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impulga. Peter Clotty has the day off.
You have sent me as your president, and I pledge here today that I will serve you side by side and work with you to build the South Africa that we all want and deserve.
Cyril Ramaphosa is inaugurated as the fifth president of South Africa.
WHO is adapting public health response strategies to identify and treat people as quickly as possible, expanding vaccination to reach and protect more people, and redoubling work to end transmission in health facilities.
The United Nations draws up new measures to strengthen its response to the Ebola epidemic in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo and put an end to the spread of the deadly virus.
I'm not quite sure whether what is a direct objective. Fact of the matter is that on the African continent, South Africa is one of the few countries who can boast with food security.
And an organization representing some South African white farmers says it will use whatever legal means necessary to stop the government from seizing members' land. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. Cyril Ramaphosa has been inaugurated as the fifth president of South Africa. He took his oath of office at Loftus Veld Stadium in the country's capital earlier today. More than 30,000 people and about 4,500 dignitaries were in attendance. From Pretoria, Yashera Ramphashada has the story.
Cyril Ramaphosa arrived at his inauguration to applause, vuvuzelas and whistles. The over 32,000 strong crowd cheered him onto the stage where he took his oath of office.
I, Matamela Cyril Ramaphosa, swear. Swear that I'll be faithful to the Republic of South Africa. Swear that I will be faithful to the Republic of South Africa.
And will obey.
And will obey.
Observe.
Observe.
Uphold.
Uphold.
And maintain the Constitution.
And maintain the Constitution.
And all law of the Republic.
And all law of the Republic.
Ramaphosa promised South Africans he would fight corruption, one of the most contentious issues in the country at the moment.
In recent times, our people have watched as some of those in whom they had invested their trust have surrendered to the temptation of power and riches. They have seen some of the very institutions of our democracy eroded and resources squandered. All South Africans want action, and there shall be action.
He also spoke about tackling poverty, unemployment, and education.
Let us declare our shared determination that we shall end poverty in South Africa within a generation. Let us declare that when we gather to celebrate the 50th year of our freedom, there shall no longer be any person in this land who is unable to meet their basic needs, that there should be no child who goes to bed hungry. Every school child will be able to read, and every person who wants to work will have a reasonable opportunity to find employment.
Ramaphosa said the government places high importance on gender transformation and will push for it to happen at a faster pace.
Today, let us celebrate the great strides we have made, demonstrated so clearly in the incoming parliament, to raise the prominence and contribution of women in public life. Let us work together to fundamentally and forever change the power relations between men and women in our country. Let us end the dominion that men claim over women, the denial of opportunity, the abuse and the violence, the neglect and the disregard for each other's human rights.
South Africans are eager for Ramaphosa to hit the ground running immediately. They want the burning issues of corruption, unemployment, education, health, and service delivery tackled. But he took over the reins of a government almost crippled by corruption, and it remains to be seen whether he can provide the turnaround the country is looking for.
You have sent me as your president, and I pledge here today that I will serve you side by side and work with you to build the South Africa that we all want and deserve.
I'm Yashira Rampasad for VOA News in Pretoria.
The United Nations has drawn up new measures to strengthen its response to the Ebola epidemic in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo and put an end to the spread of this deadly virus, which already has claimed more than 1,200 lives. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the World Health Assembly in Geneva, where the new plan has been presented.
The plan is top-heavy with senior officials who will oversee and coordinate UN and international efforts to come to grips with this virulent disease. The Ebola epidemic was declared 10. Months ago, in conflict-ridden North Kivu and Ituri provinces in eastern DRC. Since then, growing insecurity and community mistrust have hampered efforts to contain the virus, heightening the risk of the disease spreading to neighboring countries. To deal with this increasingly complex situation, World Health Organization spokesman Tarek Jazarevich says the UN, in close cooperation with the DRC government and partners, is strengthening its political engagement, bolstering preparedness plans, and increasing support for humanitarian. Coordination.
WHO is adapting public health response strategies to identify and treat people as quickly as possible, expanding vaccination to reach and protect more people, and redoubling work to end transmission in health facilities. The United Nations Secretary General has established a strengthened coordination and support mechanism in the epicenter of the outbreak, Butembo.
To head this effort, the UN chief has appointed two high-ranking experienced officials. David Gressley, newly appointed as UN Emergency Ebola Response Coordinator, will oversee the coordination of international support for the Ebola response. He will work closely with WHO on health operations and with Assistant Director General for Emergency Response, Ibrahima Sose Fall. He has been leading WHO's Ebola response in DRC from Butembo since mid-March. Fall, whose responsibilities will be expanded, praises the new approach to the Ebola crisis. He says it will provide better security for patients and health workers and wider access to an effective Ebola vaccine. He says the plan also will present a more humane face to the response, which should help allay community suspicion. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Due to the economic downturn over the past 20 years in the country, Zimbabwe's railway network has ground to a near halt, operating at way below its capacity and glory days. Recent efforts to revive the rail network appear to be faltering. Adegondo gives us more on the story.
The government parastatal National Railways of Zimbabwe, NRZ, manages the country's archaic rail network. And in a much-touted deal last year, a consortium of Zimbabwean businessmen called the Diaspora Infrastructure Development Group, DIDG, based in South Africa, approached the government with a deal which was intended to see the NRZ reviving its operations. In 2017, Diaspora Infrastructure Development Group, DIDG, partnered South Africa's Transnet and clinched the $400 million tender to recapitalize the National Railways of Zimbabwe. A total of US $1.7 is required to refurbish the aging rail network. The deal terms involve DIDG and Transnet jointly raising the funding. Transnet will manufacture and supply locomotives and provide technical and operations expertise. With 14 new locomotives, 200 high-side wagons, and 7 passenger coaches having been supplied under the deal, progress has been slow given the intricate legal and technical nature of the arrangement. Addressing Parliament this past week, Transport Minister Joe Biggie Matiza told parliamentarians that the DIDG had lost exclusivity rights over the deal, which he alleged was stalling overfunding. Observers such as James Joa expressed their surprise over the minister's comments, which appear to scupper the deal for DIDG.
The recent developments in which the Minister of Transport, Mr. Matiza, came out to say that DIDG no longer enjoys exclusive rights to partner with the National Railway of Zimbabwe are a bit surprising, because this is an arrangement that has been ongoing, and I think it came into place well before the minister was appointed in the recent cabinet reshuffle.
Despite the Zimbabwe's open for business mantra, Joa sees the case as an example of ministerial overreach and possible abuse of office.
But this is not also surprising given the nature of contracts in Zimbabwe, where we've seen ministers wielding too much power. And our legislation probably needs to be realigned in order to usher in a bit of transparency and accountability, where there's collective decision making, where the minister doesn't make decisions on the hoof.
The Transport Minister, on his part, told Parliament that the issue was a contractual one in which DIDG and its main partner, Transnet, was awarded the tender on condition that they would raise the money within a year. DIDG counters that the minister was in fact shown the term sheets for the deal as far back as October 2018. Citing partners such as Transnet and funding institutions such as South African banking giants Nedbank, Absa, Standard Bank, Industrial Development Corporation of South Africa, and local bank, Commercial Bank of Zimbabwe, CBZ, DIDG has been quoted in media reports stressing that it won the tender and that it is on course to finalize the deal by August 2019. Donovan Chimamanda, the DIDG CEO, furnished VOA with documents relating to the deal, which appears to support his claims. And he asserted his organization readiness to conclude the deal.
We have enough banks interested in the project as per the term sheets that you've seen. So the money being there or secured, that's not an issue. I think it's now the syndication process. That's where we are.
Zimbabwe's rail network has in the past been a carrier of goods and passengers within and across the Southern African region, connecting the country to neighbors such as Zambia, Botswana, and South Africa. Its resuscitation is viewed by most analysts as critical in the revival of Zimbabwe's transport network against a background in which the country is saddled with grinding fuel challenges. In recent times, the aging railway cars, dubbed Freedom Trains, have provided low-price transportation relief to commuters in some suburbs in the city of Bulawayo who cannot afford the rising fares charged by private commuter transporters. Private commuter transport operators have over the years filled the vacuum left in the wake of the collapse of both the country's state-owned public road and rail transport companies. However, these private operators are also beginning to buckle under the weight of the economic challenges in the country and the shortages of fuel and price increases. Reporting for VOA in Bulawayo, this is Adi Gondo.
The Zimbabwean government's announcement of long hours of power cuts and fuel shortages are forcing some citizens and businesses to resort to solar energy for survival. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, the country's new energy minister says he's asking Zimbabweans to suggest long-term solutions for perennial energy problems.
The government recently announced the lengthy power cuts due to low levels of water in Kariba Dam on the border with Zambia, Zimbabwe's main hydropower source. 33-year-old Collins Chigwagwa runs a small barber shop in one of Harare's middle-class suburbs. Chigwagwa says last week he paid $250 for a solar power system that he says can hold power for up to 8 hours. Chigwagwa says the power cuts forced him to buy the solar power system. He said, "We can go for 8 hours without power or even the whole day without power." He also says 8 hours is a whole day production, yet he depends on power to get money for food and rent. He says if he misses a whole day of production, all that money is gone. While the cleaner energy might not be within the reach of many Zimbabweans, Kingston Makuwe of Genking Power Services, a company that imports solar energy devices, says the power cuts have been a blessing for his business. Last week, President Emmerson Mnangagwa demoted Energy Minister Joram Gumbo because of chronic fuel shortages and power cuts. On Monday, Gumbo's replacement, Fortune Chasi, said he was still consulting Zimbabweans on the suggestions to the long-term solutions to the energy issues. About 50 kilometers northwest of Harare, a private company, Central Grid, has installed about 7,000 solar panels, which it says will generate 2.5 megawatts next month. The company has spent $5 million so far and says it needs an additional $25 million to make its project a 25-megawatt plant that can feed into the national grid. Company director Victor Utez says it has not been easy. Zimbabwe has struggled to obtain foreign currency for many years amid an ailing economy and sanctions on the country's top leaders. People like Colin Chigwagwa hope that one way or another, Zimbabweans will find a way to make solar power part of their daily lives. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
A new initiative in Washington during the month of Ramadan aims to offer more choices for Muslims to break their fast. The new effort encourages local restaurants to stay open late in the evening during the holy month. Muslim Americans are thrilled to have the opportunity to dine after dark. From Washington, reporter Mohammed Al-Shanawi has the story.
According to the Pew Research, Muslims make up about 2% of the adult population in the Washington metro area. In Ramadan, when observant Muslims fast from dawn to sunset, which can be as late as 8:30 p.m., finding a place to break their fast with an iftar dinner can be tricky. Catherine Brand, a Christian full-time graduate student at George Washington University, launched a new initiative encouraging restaurants in Washington to stay open later to accommodate fasting Muslims.
We've gotten incredible response and really touched that these businesses are trying to accommodate them during their holiday season, you know, and Dine After Dark wants to be a resource for Muslim consumers where they can come on our website and see everywhere that's available for them during Ramadan to Dine After Dark. And people are really excited about it. We're thrilled.
She aims to have 75 restaurants take part this year, starting with those that offer halal menus. Her initiative expanded to offer free meals for poor Muslims through a secular organization that offers food, aid, and education help to families in need.
We have Martha's Table, which is a local charity here in D.C., and Martha's Table is actually sponsoring our what we're calling our iftar car that visits different communities every night and serves iftar dinners for free.
Brent grew up celebrating Christmas, taking for granted many of the special accommodations offered for Christians, from shopping malls open until midnight to special restaurants meals to free shipping for Christmas gifts from online retailers. That prompted her to launch her initiative to accommodate fasting Muslims in Ramadan. Muhammad Mubaydeen is the imam of a local mosque. He appreciates this initiative as a sign of tolerance in the American society.
Catherine has done an outstanding job, and it makes you feel good to know that your Christian brothers and sisters, they do feel you, and they want you to have a good holiday and enjoy your fasting. So we appreciate Kathy, and what she's doing is a great move.
Brand plans to include restaurants in neighboring suburbs in Maryland and Virginia next Ramadan, so Muslims in the suburbs can have more dining options after dark. Mohammed El-Shenawi, VOA News, Washington.
An organization representing some South African white farmers says it will use whatever legal means necessary to stop the government from seizing its members' land. The ruling African National Congress, or ANC, is trying to pass a law that allowing it to expropriate land without compensating owners. The ANC says this may be necessary to establish more black commercial farmers. Under apartheid, the racist administrations reserved most of the best land for whites, condemning black people to live in impoverished townships and rural areas. Darren Taylor reports in this part of the story.
Extremist organizations and some within the ANC itself have called white South Africans land thieves. It's an accusation that the Transvaal Agricultural Union's policy manager, Chris Van Sail, rejects.
The issue of stolen land is well far removed from historic truth.
What about the cases of black people being forced from fertile land to make way for white farmers in the past?
The original white settlers who tried their best to escape from British colonial or Western European rule settled in what was regarded as empty land.
Van Sail explains that the first whites to arrive in South Africa were the Dutch in 1652, who established a trading post at the Cape. He says the Dutch negotiated for land with the region's Khoisan people, who were semi-nomadic hunter-gatherers, and the groups lived in harmony. But according to historians, the white settlers denied land rights to the Khoisan on the basis that the Cape's original inhabitants had no written evidence of ownership. The ANC says black people have been hungry for farmland for centuries. But Van Sail says his union's study of past and present land claims shows that people don't want land to farm. They want land on which to build houses in urban areas.
The job opportunities in the towns and the cities are much bigger than what could be accommodated on commercial farms.
Numerous academic studies show that thousands of people are leaving the rural regions for cities and towns. Van Sail says a lot can be learned from the 36,000 claims for land that were lodged shortly after the country became a democracy in 1994.
The vast majority of claimants preferred cash compensation, not the land. The land which was transferred to beneficiaries. About 94% of such land fell into unproductivity.
But the ANC argues that more people would remain in the countryside if they had good land to work, and it has promised to support them better. However, Van Sail isn't convinced of the governing party's ability to implement meaningful land reform. He says it's had 25 years to process land claims, yet it's still battling a backlog of hundreds of thousands of cases. His union is concerned that the ANC will use a law permitting land seizures to clear this logjam.
Then we will were probably hit with consequences too bad to even contemplate.
Are you suggesting that the ANC's move towards expropriating land is specifically aimed at ending the white farmers' domination of South Africa's agricultural sector?
I'm not quite sure whether that is a direct objective. The fact of the matter is that on the African continent, South Africa is one of the few countries who can boast with food security.
Fonseil agrees that South Africa needs more black commercial farmers to grow the economy, but he says taking land from white food producers isn't the way to go. His union argues it would be better for the state to settle new farmers on the vast tracts of territory it owns instead of denying them title deeds and forcing them to lease government land. Fonseil says should the ANC succeed in changing the property clause in the constitution, all South Africans will be in danger of dispossession. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
This is VOA and you're listening to Nightline Africa, and coming up in the second half of the program, our Saturday music spot from our collection of music from across the continent. And now it's time for a Saturday music spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great music from Africa.
Bye. Katik, Katika, Katik, Katika, Katik, Katika. Nina midadi kaya rumba, kibao kato kinyonga. Mfukoni na mavumba, lungu nichili na sunta,
where did you go? chan tan belo mala Bekauto ala Rasun bizu atallala Endala fikr kale yalle fite yalle Menes yamrenyal I am renyim yebeqanyal alfal So what the bye-bye
C'est d'entendre quand je briserai les chaînes comme Django, Django. Je briserai les chaînes comme Django, Django. Je briserai les chaînes comme Django, Django. Je briserai les chaînes comme Django, Django.
Il veut nous éloigner, donc il sort toutes sortes de foutaises. Et quand je lui demande quel genre d'homme il te faut, il me dit comme toi, mais pas toi. Laisse-moi le calmer, il faut que son cœur s'apaise. Laisse-moi lui montrer qu'il a tort de penser qu'un autre t'aimera bien plus que moi. Il veut que tu te maries, que tu fondes une famille avec n'importe quel autre homme que moi. Il me voit comme celui qui vient lui voler sa fille pour te retenir, il abuse de ses droits. Je veux bien être gentil, papa, mais même toi tu peux pas nous bloquer. Donc on va parler d'homme à homme, car c'est ma vie là et tu m'empêches d'avancer. Je veux que tu portes mon nom de famille, mais ça prend du temps. Même parler de notre avenir à tes parents, mais ils m'ont dit d'attendre. J'ai fait tout ce que ton père m'a dit, mais il est jamais content. Et s'il décide d'être l'ennemi de notre amour, il sera forcé d'entendre. Quand je briserai les chaînes comme Django, Django.
Que je fasse pour avoir dans son cœur une place. J'ai fait l'impossible pour que ce soit possible. Il me voit comme un bon à rien, mais dis-lui que je suis bon dans tout ce que je fais. Dans ma vie, je sais où je vais. Contre ses choix, je refuse, je m'impose. C'est toi mon choix et pas une autre. Laisse-le croire qu'on poussera droit dans un mur. Change pas d'avis de nous, je suis sûr. À ta mère, je prendrai soin de toi avec ou sans son accord. L'affaire, je lâcherai pas, je compte pas t'abandonner. Sache que
je veux que tu portes mon nom de famille, mais ça prend du temps.
J'ai
parlé de notre avenir à tes parents, mais ils m'ont dit d'attendre.
J'ai fait tout ce que ton père m'a dit,
mais
il est jamais content.
Et s'il décide d'être l'ennemi de notre amour, il sera forcé d'entendre. C'est les chaînes comme Django, Django. C'est les chaînes comme Django, Django. C'est les chaînes.
paniquer. Il ne faut pas paniquer, non. C'est qu'une épreuve à traverser avant l'arrivée. Même s'il ne veut pas valider, c'est qu'une épreuve à traverser avant l'arrivée. Django, Django.
هما كلها موحلة
كلها موحلة
دق 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 كلها تشوف الدنيا كحلة سحرة قحلة
سحرة قحلة
دق 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 بس تشوف الدنيا أحلى والحومة مفحلة
والحومة مفحلة
دق 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 تستنى في عسل النحلة صابورة كحلة
صابورة كحلة
هزنا الطيار ورمى نافع قبل رحلة yeah. ضايع بين الحيوت وما لقيتش بلاصة حومة بين بلاد الهوت يما خلوني بالشيخة مصموت وحكموا ناس الراقة والكراسي بالهبوط يا نحب نشد الروت ونقلب المناظر نقلب وجهي من هنا يما ما نحب نعيش الأحياء بالموت نوفا كيما ولد الجارع بالشيخة بلا
يا ليلي ويا ليلى وش باش نسكيلك يما وقالوا لي ليلى صغير وفي قلبي غمة حب الدين ودير الفوق يحبوا يقصوا لي جناحي قولي ذكراني مخنوق ومنك طالب اسماحي
ريوس الرجالة ميلة
ميلة
رزنط بالتخمام وبالشيخ عالم خاخم بيلة ولاد الحومة اشوة النمقيلة شرف العينين بالخير ما هيش مسك فيلة حبوا يسوقونا كيف الزيلة ومربط في زريبة وخطوة السكين مكيلة يحبوك بري ما عندك شي عيلة نعيشوا في سيستام حكمه ولاد المتحيلة yeah. يحبوك غايب على الوجود ساكت على حقك وراضي باللي يحبو موجود يما تجري وماكش خالط على القوت شخلى ولاد الحومة قطع قطع من الحدود سيدو في قفصك مربوط وذبع مسيب وزيدك لك عشاك يما حبوك قاعد في زنقة مرفوض والمستقبل تشوف فيه متعدي بحثك
يا ليلي ويا ليلى وش باش نسكيلك يما وقالوا لي ليلى صغير وفي قلبي غمة حب الدين ودير الفوق يحبوا يقصوا لي جناحي قولي ذكراني مخنوق ومنك طالب اسماحي يا ليلي يا ليلى وش باش نشكيلك يما وقالوا لي ليلى صغير وفي قلبي غمة حب الدين ودير الفوق يحبوا يقصوا لي جناحي قولي ذكراني مخنوق ومنك طالب اسماحي
I can't
stop thinking about you.
Yeah, خلاص انا وانت حبيبي مفيش حاجة نقولها واصلين لدرجة حب محدش في الدنيا وصلها انا ليك وعمري ما اكون يا حبيبي غير ليك روحي شغلها دي الثانية وانت بعيد ازاي قلبي هيستحملها
This is VOA News.